Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:31 p.m. on Tuesday, March 30th. We're meeting in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please remember to silence your cell phone as a courtesy. Committee members present today are Senator Reinbolt, Senator Hughes, Senator Costello, and Senator Baggage, and myself, Senator Wilson. We have a quorum to do conduct business. Today, we will begin with Senate Bill 92, Missing Persons Under 21, which is sponsored by Senate Rules on behalf of the governor. We'll hear an overview of the bill and take a sectional analysis, and take testimony. Today with us are Randy Brager, the legislative liaison from the Department of Public Safety, and Catherine Monfrida, the director of statewide services from the Department of Public Safety, are also online. And available to answer questions are Lieutenant Paul Fussy and Captain David Wilson, two L's, no relation, from the Alaska State Troopers. With that, Ms. Brager, if you can put yourself on the record, and we also have Ms. Jody Simpson here, our committee aide, to advance the slides for committee members. So if you can just let us know what slides you're on as we can get started.
Thank you so much, Mr. Tamman. Good afternoon to you and as well as the members of the committee. Thank you for having us here to present Senate Bill 92, Missing Persons Under 21 Years of Age. In your packets, you have a copy of Governor Dunleavy's sponsor statement, as well as our sectional analysis, our presentation that we'll be providing today, as well as some statistics we thought might be helpful to the committee. As part of our presentation, we will do that sectional analysis as well. This is a fairly simple bill, but we wanted to really kind of line it out side by side with you in terms of what we're doing with our current law and practices regarding these statutes and what changes we're asking to be implemented. The director of the Division of Statewide Services, Catherine Monfrida, is on the line and will be providing this presentation. She is really our department's expert in these statutes. And as Senator Wilson already mentioned, we do have additional folks on the line to answer any questions regarding these statutes that you might have, especially as it pertains to kind of the law enforcement process and how that interfaces with these statutes. So with that, I will turn it over to Director Monfrida. Thank you so much.
Good afternoon, Chairman Wilson, members of the Senate Health and Social Services Committee. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Great, thank you. For the record, my name is Catherine Monfrida, and I'm the director of the Division of Statewide Services with the Department of Public Safety. I thank you for hearing our presentation of SB 92. This bill brings state law into conformity with federal law as it pertains to the reporting of missing persons between the ages of 18 and 21. You can move to the next slide, please. Federal law, specifically Suzanne's Law, which was enacted in 2003, and a portion of the Adam Walsh Act enacted in 2006, collectively require law enforcement agencies to enter information pertaining to missing persons under the age of 21 into the National Crime Information Center, also known as NCIC database, within 2 hours. Suzanne's Law was named after Suzanne Lyall, a student at the State University of New York at Albany, who disappeared in 1998 and has never been found. Adam Walsh was a 5-year-old boy who was abducted from a Sears department store in Florida in 1981. His head was found 2 weeks later in a drainage ditch. Next slide. Alaska's laws pertaining to the reporting of missing persons have not been amended since they were enacted in the mid and late 1980s. Today, Alaska Statute 1865-620 requires law enforcement to report missing minors to the state's missing person clearinghouse if not located within 48 hours of being reported missing. Alaska Statute 4710-141 requires the reporting of missing minors to state and national databases, which is APPS and the Alaska Public Safety Information Network and NCIC, within 24 hours after a missing person report is completed. And Alaska Statute 47.10.380 defines runaway minor as being a person under the age of 18. Next slide. This slide summarizes the proposed changes, which will conform with federal law pertaining to missing persons under the age of 21. Specifically, that all reported missing persons under the age of 21 rather than 18 are entered into the state and national databases within 2 hours as opposed to the current state requirement of 24 hours. Next slide. For informational purposes, training is already in place regarding the more restrictive federal requirements and most state and local law enforcement agencies are already complying with these federal requirements. Programming of the state database, APSIN, has been completed as well to accommodate the more restrictive requirements. Next slide. The benefits of enacting this law are to remove conflicting and less restrictive statutory requirements, achieving a faster state and nationwide notification for missing persons under 21 years of age, and the improved response for vulnerable college-age population. Once entered into the national system, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children is notified and proactively offers assistance with these investigations. Next slide. This is a sectional analysis of the bill. There's only three sections to it. Section 1 removes the reference to 4710.141 and Alaska Statute 1865.620, since the time required for the entering of missing persons into APSIN and NCIC is now specified in 1865.620. Section 2 adds a new subsection to 1865.620 to specify that law enforcement agencies must report a missing person under the age of 21 to APSIN and NCIC within 2 hours of completing the report and must remove that information not later than 24 hours after learning the person's been located. And finally, Section 3 amends 4710.141A to remove the language pertaining to the time of entry and time of removal from the state and national databases, since this is now specified in 1865.620. The bill has no specific effective date and will become effective 90 days after being signed. That concludes our presentation, and I thank you for your time. I'm available to answer any questions.
All right, you have questions, Senator Reinbold.
First of all, it's great to see you, Catherine. I'll never forget looking up when SB 91 passed, looking up who did the statistics and started tracking your work, and you do amazing work. And so thank you very much. It was an honor to have you at the when I was trying to repeal SB 91, and I think there were sponsors here at the meeting where I actually got to meet you. But anyway, I admire things that you do. And so basically what my question for you is today is why now? You know, like if this was way back in 2003, you know, they had it modified, I think is what you said, or when the statutes were done. What has triggered it? Is it something Congress has done? I know there was a bunch of money, a couple million dollars, that was supposed to be going towards women and children, and I think it focused in particular on the indigenous women and children. I mean, what is triggering this now?
It's true, the Chair, Senator Reinbold. Partially, I think it brought it back to our forefront with the murdered and missing indigenous women and us taking a really close, hard look at the missing persons. We have proposed this before in the past, but sometimes laws don't, you know, potential bills just don't get moving forward until it hits the right time, and that's basically what happened in this case. We proposed it again this year, and the governor accepted it to be introduced.
Follow-up, Senator?
I just, so this is, there was nothing in particular, I guess, it sounds like, that triggered this bill right now. Okay. It's just important. I always like to track down who's behind it, what's going on, why now, if there's an important gap, you know, that it's filling, or it sounds like this has been going on for a long time, and this is just closing a gap. Is that correct?
Through the Chair, Senator Reinbold, that's correct. We're just trying to have state law comply with federal law. And like I stated in the presentation, we've been training to this standard anyway, so it's just really a formality to make the laws match.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ms. Monfrida, I have a question on one of your slides. You said that most local law enforcement agencies are complying with this now. Do you know how this notification would go out for this change if we made it to a statewide compliance, and how that notification will go out, or how many agencies are not in compliance with this change?
To the Chair, we audit these agencies for compliance. I don't have information at my fingertips on how many are and how many are not, but what I'm being told is most of the agencies are complying.
Okay. If you could possibly, if you can try to track down that information and provide that to the committee, I think that might be helpful.
We will. Thank you. Other questions?
All right. Oh, Senator Hughes.
Actually, thank you. And, yes, and I agree with Senator Reinbold as far as your assistance on all our work on the crime statutes and judiciary earlier in prior session. We really appreciate your work. I'm just curious what all gets entered, and it's not pertinent, I guess, so much to the passage of this bill, but just for our foundation of information and understanding, because I get NCSL alerts about missing minors often, too often. And I'm just wondering what kind of data does go in there. Are we putting photos, descriptions? What kind of things are going out across the country regarding the missing persons under age 21? And how does that compare to what might go out and about an adult?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, there's really two methods. I talked about them in the presentation. We have the Missing Persons Clearinghouse, which is notified of all missing persons within 24 hours. And then we have the ABSIN and NCIC systems. The ABSIN and NCIC systems are really for the law enforcement use primarily. That includes basic description of the person. Our system right now is not capable of adding photos to it. We are hoping to be replacing its system and having modern technology that will be able to include photos of missing persons in that for law enforcement purposes. For the most part, it just is a description, name, face, name, sex, race, height, weight, what they were last known wearing, if that's known. If they're with a vehicle, we'll include that information. The Missing Persons Clearinghouse person is, when they start investigating the missing persons, they will add the photos and any other descriptive information that they have, including DNA if that's available from family members, and including dental records if they can obtain that information. That's submitted in the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, get that information. It's public information. We put out flyers. I don't know if Lieutenant Fussy maybe wants to talk more about exactly what the Missing Person Clearinghouse does as far as these investigations. That's not part of my area of management, but I don't know if you'd like more. I'm sure Lieutenant Fussy can explain.
I think I'm fine. I just want to thank you, and you didn't say there was a difference between what's submitted for a minor versus an adult, so would it be similar then?
I apologize through the chair yet, and there is no difference. We obtain as much information as we can about, regardless of their age.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there baggage, Chairman?
No.
All right, seeing no other questions, we will go to public testimony. Taking public testimony for Senate Bill 92. Not seeing anyone here in the room, Juno, wish to testify? Not seeing any, and not seeing anyone on the phone lines. We will go ahead and close public testimony for Senate Bill 92. Are there any other questions for the committee, or to the sponsor, or I guess to the department? And Ms. Monfria or Ms. Brager, do you have any other closing comments before we put this bill aside?
For the record, this is Randy Brager again with the Department of Public Safety. I apologize. I don't think I did that the first time. No closing comments. We just wanted to thank you for your time. We understood that this was a fairly simple bill, which is sometimes refreshing with all of the really hard work you guys are doing. But we appreciate your time this afternoon in hearing what we wanted to propose.
I just have a question. I hope it's the right time. Being on finance and the chair of Health and Social Services, maybe it is. But I've been trying to track down what happened to those millions of dollars that came from the federal for missing women and children, and I have not been able to track it down. Do you know where, or does anyone online know where that money is? Because it's a huge issue in this state.
I do not, but Ms. Berger, did you hear the question from Senator Reinbold?
I did. Thank you, sir. Senator Reinbold, through the chair, there's, I think, a lot of kind of mysticism around this money that was kind of provided to the state. Partly that came because of the announcements from the federal level government announcing funds that had already been granted to our state for a number of years. I think there was different figures of $40, $50, $60 million. But in terms of the new money that came to the state as a direct result of Attorney General Barr's visit to Alaska and the declaration of violence against women being a disaster in our state, the Department of Public Safety was asked to apply for and granted $6 million of a FLIA funds, and I apologize, I have that acronym and I can email it to you. Those funds were specifically for rural communities for public safety infrastructure, and so those funds were passed in their entirety to the Department of Commerce to manage and provide. And so the state did not retain any of those grant funds, not even administrative costs. They were fully granted out to local rural communities. A majority of the projects were upgrading office facilities and cells, jail cells, stuff like that. And they were provided to a lot of very small communities, so villages, tribal police groups, and then I believe a couple, maybe even two VPSO programs, Village Public Safety Officer programs.
One final question. So it sounds like a lot of it was used for capital projects, but it sounds like some of it could have been used for VPSOs and some of the local tribal. Did we have good outcome? I mean, is there less of a problem now? Everybody needs to be looking right now on the rate of return on investment. And I want to know that it made a difference, or if it didn't, we need to know that as well, so it's not invested in things like that. Obviously, capital projects is a no-brainer, but in regards to, has there been less missing women and children, and has there been more, hopefully, prosecutions, so that these villages and rural communities, even the larger cities, are safer?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator. Through the chair, all $6 million of the dollars of the grant fund I was speaking of were all capital funds, so they did not go to hiring public safety officers or personnel. The design for those funds were those infrastructure components, because as Attorney General Barr traveled throughout the state, that was a consistent need that got brought up by many of the different rural communities.
Thank you. Thank you. That's helpful.
All right. Thank you. And thank you again, Ms. Berger, for being here and providing some additional comments. We'll set this bill aside. We'll ask for amendments to be due to our office by 5 p.m. on Friday, April 2nd. And now we will return to Senate Bill 89. This was the assisted living homes House rules by the Senate Rules Committee on behalf of the governor. We took and heard testimony on this bill with Senator Hughes on March 18th. Our office received no amendments to this bill. We do have folks online for any additional questions. And are there any amendments this afternoon? Double checking. All right. Seeing none, is there a motion to move Senate Bill 89 from?
Maybe just one question. I think. I asked a question back when it was before us about page 3, lines 23 to 26, which is the revisor's instruction that was related to the executive order. And at the time, I was told that there might still be an executive order splitting the department coming forward. And, of course, that deadline is now passed. And so I just want to confirm, Mr. Chairman, we agreed just to leave that in here in the event that there is some executive order that moves forward at some point during this bill's wandering journey through the legislature. Is that right? Do I remember that correctly?
I do not remember that. Senator Hughes.
Oh, you weren't here. That's right.
Yeah,
sorry. Senator Hughes.
What I recall is in the event that another one were issued prior to gaveling in the second regular session of the 32nd legislature, this would take care of that, so that we would leave it in for that reason.
And it says the first regular session on line 24. That's why I was
right, but that would go all the way until we before we gavel in. So if say in October another order is issued, then this would cover that.
Or a special session within a session.
Or special, yes.
So it wouldn't cover a special because it's only for the first regular session. That it's not a big deal for me. It is essentially a piece of uncodified law that will be meaningless it's not a big issue for me. Let's just see if it is removed later on in the process. I have no further comments, Mr. Chairman. I didn't mean to delay that. Sorry about that.
Yes, Senator Reinbold.
I just have one question. It's on section 2, line 8. it said an assisted living home may not adopt a house rule that unreasonably restricts the right of a resident. Anyway, it, can someone define unreasonably there? I mean, because that obviously is debatable. I don't know if someone is on HESS, but yes, that may be a point of contention in the future.
We will ask John Lee, the Director, Division Senior Service and Disability, if you're there with us, John, if you can put yourself on the record. And I'm not sure if you need the question to be restated.
For the record, this is John Lee, and I'm the chair of, I'm the Director of Senior and Disability Services through the chair. If Senator Weinbold, through the chair, the 42 CFR, which is what the Senate Bill 89 is attempting to be in line with, is very specific about certain things. It's very specific that residents have the right for visitors, the visitors are their choosing at the time of their choosing, and so any rules that would limit an individual's ability to have visitors would be in violation. And I know Craig Baxter, who's also on the line, has some things he wants to respond to for the question.
Mr. Baxter, there you are.
This is Craig Baxter with Healthcare Services through the chair. You know, in our standard practice at the licensing agency for house rules that are unreasonably restrictive would require the facility to put the rationale for the restriction in the resident's care plan and have their treatment team, which would include their guardian, their care coordinator, and if necessary, a behavioral health provider and or physician, sign off on any sort of restriction as far as rules go that would impact the individual that would be, you know, to demonstrate that it was reasonable.
Senator Reinbold?
I just want to say thank you. That's really helpful, because I thought I liked the language and they ended up defining it very well, and I think that was helpful to get that on the record. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you. I see no other questions. Senator Hughes.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 89, Version A, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
All right. Is there any objection? All right. Seeing none, Senate Bill 89 moves to the next committee of referral. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the documents. We are back on the record. Now we're going to take our attention to Senate Bill 98, Adult Foster Care for Disabled, by the Senate Rules Committee on behalf of the Governor. We first heard and took testimony on Senate Bill 98 on March 18th with Senator Hughes as the chair. Our office received no amendments. Are there any questions for the bill sponsor? Or I should have asked if the bill sponsor has any other remarks for Senate Bill 98. Mr. Lee?
Chairman Wilson, this is Director John Lee for the record. We have nothing else to add for the bill. I know we presented this at the last hearing.
All right. Any questions for the department? Once, going twice. All right. Senator Hughes, is there a motion to move this bill from committee?
There certainly is, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 98, Version A, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
All right. Any objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 98 moves to the next committee of referral. And as the paperwork's going around, that concludes our business for today. There is no meeting on Thursday, April 1st. Are there any other closing comments? Seeing none, please stick around to sign the paperwork, and we are adjourned at 1:57 p.m.